Hey everybody, thanks for tuning in. The next 10 minutes are inspired by Wedding Vows and Jamie from the King's Guard. I hope you enjoy it. Welcome to the engine. So, if you go to any weddings, you'll notice most of the time people now have vows that are written out. Custom vows is what I mean. It used to be that you had very standard vows, you know, to love and to hold, all that stuff, sickness and health. And you find some of that being represented in contemporary wedding vows. But the majority of weddings that I've gone to, and I've gone to about a dozen the last, you know, dozen or so years, have all had custom wedding vows. And these custom wedding vows are top shelf. So we're talking about not just like to love and hold you, but we're talking to be your best friend, to be your spiritual guide, to be there with the umbrella on Tuesday when it's like sprinkling on your beautiful hair. There's so many things going into these wedding vows. Mine are actually up on my wall, and I look at them sometimes. And I love being married, and I want to honor these vows, and they're important, right? Because obviously the vows represent your intention, and we say wedding vows, but people don't really take them as vows anymore. Vows are a very real, deep promise, you know, like you're giving your word, kind of like that scene from Jerry Maguire, "My word's as good as oak," and it's great. These are important things, and they represent our aspirations for ourselves, right? I vowed to never lie. Well, I think on average, married couples lie to each other something like 10 times an hour. Not huge lies like, you know, "I paid for the mortgage," but in reality, you're going to get foreclosed on. Little lies like, "Did you like the steamed carrots I made for you?" "Oh yeah, they were delicious." But in reality, who likes steamed carrots? People lie all the time. But the vows obviously represent not what you're going to do, what you hope you're going to do, and what you really, really try to do. The issue comes in when these vows get super elaborate. Because when you have, you know, a spiritual guide and your best friend and, you know, your husband and the father of your children or mother of your children, all these different things, you get this onslaught of obligation. Now, again, marriage is a very real obligation, not one to be taken lightly, and it's worth it, in my mind, if you find the right person and you're the right person as well. Let's not discount that. It takes two. So it's a great thing, or at the very least can be, but it's an enormous obligation. And just staying with somebody, aside from how you're going to stay with them, is an enormous obligation. Right, staying married to somebody and not doing all these wonderful things that are said, like just coexisting, that can be really, really difficult, because we all know people who are barely hanging on in their marriages or their relationships, and they're not particularly nice to each other. They're not always honest with each other. They're not even upholding the vows, and they're barely hanging on. They're barely staying together. So staying together and doing all of these things get a little dicey for some people, and most people, in fact, because again, the custom vows make it almost impossible to not break vows. That's the funny thing. The more we state our intentions with these vows, the more deeply we explore the kind of partner we would want to be, which is, again, next time you hear wedding vows, think about that. That's really just telling you who the person hopes they will be for the rest of their lives. Honest and fantastic and spiritual and steadfast, all of these things. Those are aspirations. Nobody out here can promise to be those things all the time. And the more things we add on, the more things we're going to miss the mark on. I very much enjoyed the show Game of Thrones. For those of you who haven't seen it, I highly recommend it. There's one character named Jamie in Game of Thrones, and he's kind of this white knight, literally. He's part of the, I believe, the White Cloaks. He's the King's Guard, and he's kind of fallen from grace. He's disgraced because he did kill a king, this guy called the Mad King. He stabbed him in the back. Now again, he's the King's Guard, and he stabbed this Mad King in the back because the Mad King was about to blow up the capital city because he was mad. He was just insane. And everybody called him the Kingslayer. Now here's the thing. Jaime was infinitely jaded and ruined by his obligations. And at one point in the series, he starts rattling off about it. He's like, they make you promise all of these things. People in general make you promise all of these things. You have to protect the weak, but you have to protect the king. Well, what if the king is killing the weak? Who do you side with? What do you do? You have all these conflicts, and it became impossible for him to uphold any of his oaths fully because he had so many and they all conflicted. And it starts to become that way with marriage and all of these custom vows because things start conflicting. And remember, these are not things we're promising we're going to do. These are things we're aspiring to do. And if you think about it that way, you start recognizing the more aspirations that you put on yourself, the more aspirations you have for you and your partner and your life, the more you're going to fail, the more frequently you're going to fail, and the more you're going to feel like a failure. It's a very funny thing, but this doesn't just account for marriage issues. This is everything, right? You want to get a job. People say now, well, I want to go to college. I want to study something I love. I want to get a job doing something I love. I want to make a lot of money getting a job doing something I love. And then, of course, I want there to be enormous flexibility when I want to have a family or I want to do other things. I also want to travel. If I could get a pony in there somewhere, that'd be great. You have all of these aspirations, especially 16 and 17-year-olds. I want to do all of these different things. Well, how in the world are you going to do that? How are we going to find something super quickly by 22 that you've now studied? I know I did not. I studied rhetoric. I'm not a rhetor or a professor or something. I also started as a math major and studying math when I was at college. I don't, you know, teach third semester calculus. So all of these things changed when I got this job as a tutor. And obviously I love what I do and I've kind of tied all of these things together, but you know, how is somebody supposed to know when they're 19 or 20 or 21 what they're going to be doing in 3 years? And how are they supposed to get that job as well? Even if you say, hey, look, I want to be an engineer and you study engineering, great. It's going to be really hard to get that job because there are lots of other engineers that are just studying like crazy. So all of a sudden, we have these aspirations. I want this job. I want this passion. I want to find my passion. I want to do these things. And the more aspirations we have, the more frequently we're going to fail in life. Our aspirations start to become our own assassin, because the more we fail, the more we don't tick the boxes, the more we're going to feel down on ourselves. Now, naturally, this is only exacerbated by social media, because you now have way more aspirations based on what you see other people doing. Okay, there are things out there that I didn't even know existed. And as soon as you go onto social media, you're like, oh, that's a thing? Oh, that's a thing, and I'm not doing that thing. I need to get after that thing. I didn't know it was a thing to walk around the field at a Niners game. I didn't know it was a thing to build awesome costumes for your kids that take 9 months to build, and of course they get thrown away the next day. I didn't know it was a thing to do all of these different awesome, cool things. And by the way, I'm not doing any of them. And God bless you if you attempt to. I went through a costume making phase a few years back, and I really wanted to make a full Halo suit. It took me 2 months to make just the helmet. Halo's a video game, futuristic soldier, head to toe with this amazing suit of armor. 2 months to make just the helmet. And I was like, oh my God, I'm terrible at this. Because I had changed my aspirations, I had changed my goals, and my aspiration to as it became to make this costume became a huge failure in my life. I realized, God, it took too much time, it took too much money. I was thinking about it all the time. I started resenting the other things in my life that were great, like working out and spending time with my wife and kids. I'd get upset that, you know, I had to take time away from making this helmet to hang with them. Then I felt bad as a husband and a father, as I should. And it was just this horrendous cycle. So again, my aspiration to become or do this new thing just wreaked havoc on my life. It was a really rough thing. And again, it wouldn't have even existed without social media, because I wouldn't have seen these crazy costumes that people were making and realized that not only could I not make them, but I was really bad at making them. I didn't have the time and I didn't have the aptitude. It was a very painful thing. And people become very jaded, as Jamie in Game of Thrones did. And I think as married couples do, you find out that these aspirations for yourself, these goals you have for your life, are really hard and a lot of times very much in conflict with each other. And then you see other people and their awesome marriages and they're all happy. And I mean, it's almost cliche now to see a couple on social media that just love each other so dearly, and it's all kisses and it's all, you're my best friend. And then find out they broke up a week later and they were never happy. But in the moment, you don't know that's coming. You don't know that they're about to break up. So in the moment, you're just comparing yourself and your horrendous lack of, you know, awesome relationship or awesome job or awesome life to these people. And your aspirations have been multiplied 100 times and you just feel horrific. And it makes people want to contract from aspirations and obligations. That's ultimately what happened to Jamie's character. He essentially renounced his obligations to anyone. And it's what happens, I think, a lot of times in marriages and relationships. People just end up crashing. It's like, I can't possibly do all 50 of these things I vowed to do. I can't. It's just too much. And they become failures in their own eyes and deeply, deeply sad. And then ultimately the relationship deteriorates. Obviously, this is a gross simplification of one cause of unhappy marriages. Lots of things go on. But I think it is a very real cause, especially for people who are really honestly trying. It just becomes so hard to be what you aspire to be. Again, your aspirations become an assassin and essentially take you out, and then you don't want to have any obligations. You don't want to have aspirations, right? I mean, it's old cliche, you set no goals and you'll never be disappointed. But that's not it. That's not how to become happy. Being a blob on the couch eating potato chips because you have no obligations or aspirations. You don't owe anyone anything. You don't owe yourself good health and good friendships and a good life. You don't owe anything to anyone. That's somebody who lacks aspiration. That's somebody who lacks obligation. That is not someone that people admire. And where do we go from this? Where do we go? If we know our aspirations are always out to get us, our aspirations are always waiting for us to err so they can just rub it in our faces that we screwed up. But we don't want the alternative. Where do we go? Where we go is not caring about failure. Not caring that you've made a mistake. It's not that you neglect the fact that you made a mistake. It's not that you deny that you erred. It's that you acknowledge it, but you don't say your error is you. You are not the mistake you made. Yes, you made a mistake. You could have made a mistake 2 seconds ago, but you made a mistake. That's in the past. You yourself, you are not a mistake. And there's a grand distinction there. You don't have to become just the sum of your past experiences, nor do you have to become a slave to your aspiring future. You can be you, and that's okay. You can aspire to be something awesome, and you can have made mistakes in your past, and you can hold these two things together in your head without your head exploding. It's not that big of a deal. You just have to say, hey, look, I aspire. I look at my vows and I think, I aspire to be everything for my wife. I really do. I want to be her friend. I want to be her partner. I want to be a great husband. I want to be a great dad. I want to be, you know, a role model to my entire family and myself, which is a difficult thing to do. And I also want to be able to hold in my head that I will make mistakes and that won't deter me. It's not going to stop me from continuing to aspire. And so that's really what we have to do moving forward in this world of insane aspiration, insane comparison. We also have to add to it an insane willingness to make mistakes. Because if we can't make mistakes, then our aspirations are useless. Because aspirations are not guarantees. Even though people like to think of them, I'm aspiring to do this thing. That doesn't mean you've done it. And it doesn't mean you're going to be able to do it. And the loftier the aspiration, the more likely it is you won't do it. But we don't need people setting their sights lower in life. We need people setting their sights higher in life. And then we need everyone around them there, ready to help them back up when they miss. And in that way, our aspirations won't become our assassins. Our aspirations will become inspirations for everyone around us, including ourselves. And on that note, thanks for listening. Go out and crush it.